Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Sports Talk with Tonsoni, sponsored by Delphi Bracketology, an episode of Bracket U, a little different with a guest on a Google Hangout on a Monday night, trying to see if there's anyone who wants to tune in and ask any questions about the bracket procedure or where their teams may stand. So trying something new other than just sending the podcast out to normal ways. We'll pull the audio off of this and make it a podcast. Joining me today is Josh Wilson of a variety of different media, the Assembly Call and Hoosiers United in the past, and just an overall great sports guy here in Indiana, along with myself. Always enjoyable, Josh, to have you on a show. How have you been?
I've been doing pretty good, Brian. It's obviously been a great last week for Indiana basketball. I'm sure we'll dive into that here shortly and their chances of landing back into the bracket, but it's been great, and it's March, and I can't be more excited. It's the best time of the year, and I always schedule a week off through work for the opening weekend, kind of that opening week of basketball. So I mean, it's like Christmas. It's the best time of the year right now for sports fans.
You know, March is, it's just something special with the high school tournament boys getting started, the women's ending here at the beginning of March, and then you have obviously the NCAA. And this week, the conference tournament starts in 14 conferences. They'll start and finish, by Sunday or early next week. And then you have the rest of the conferences join in, the major conferences join in on their conference tournament. And as far as bracketing procedures go, the winners of those conferences get the automatic bid, and there are 32 teams that will automatically be in the tournament simply by winning the tourney. It's why we turn into ESPN to watch those tourney games. What tourney are you looking forward to the most in these conferences?
I think selfishly it would be the Big Ten, just because I think Mike DeCourcy – touched on it last night on Big Ten Basketball Beyond, is this really might be the most dangerous bracket, the tournament field that the Big Ten has ever fielded. I mean, there's not one game that somebody can walk into and feel real comfortable. I mean, there used to be, you know, games that you could pencil in, but there's teams that are going to play on Wednesday that have every opportunity to play on Saturday. And I think it's just going to be, it's been the best conference all year long, and I think it's going to continue to be that. I think there's going to be some major, major upsets in that tournament. I mean, the top four teams are going to have games, very, very rough games on Friday, and it's going to be a heck of a lot of fun to watch.
And a lot of those teams that are lower seeded in the Big Ten are going to be fighting for their tournament life. Right now, maybe six teams are comfortably in, six or seven, and then you have two or three that might need to advance all the way to Saturday, if not win the whole thing to get into the tournament. So the other thing that's interesting on our part from at Delphi Brackets and Delphi Bracketology is the fact that if there is a surprise in some of these tournaments, that takes away bids that we currently have in our seed list and our brackets right now. Most of our work is done with who is leading the conference right now. We assume that that team's going to win the conference tournament. In reality, that very rarely happens. So when we put out a bracket, and we'll put one out on Wednesday after our big meeting, it'll include 32 teams who are the favorites. But as upsets happen, that lowers the number of at-large bids left. So teams like our Indiana, Creighton, who's on the outside looking in, Clemson, who's on the outside looking in, they really don't want any upsets in conference tournaments because they want as many at-large spots as possible available, and that adds something to these conference tournaments.
Yeah, it's going to be it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. I'm really intrigued by Wofford. A lot of people have really said that they are going to be a solid, I mean, they're in regardless whether they win their conference tournament or not. So I'm really eager to see, you know, if they lose on the very first day of the conference tournament, how that really pans out, because that's a long time to wait for teams like that. And obviously they don't have all the wins that they, some of these bigger conference teams own, but you know, they went 18-0 in conference, and they've obviously, I mean, they're ranked, I think they're low 20s. I think I saw earlier today. So I'm really intrigued with teams like that, teams like Buffalo, you know, if they don't win the MAC, I mean, are they still somebody's bid? Are they in at large? So I've always, I played at a small college, and you kind of want to give the small guys the opportunities. But, at the end of the day, I see a lot of people post questions on there. What if you throw those teams, say, into the Big Ten? Do they win more than five games? Or so you always bounce those questions. But, I mean, they've played great basketball. So I'm really intrigued to see those teams and, see what happens if they don't win their conference tournament.
That'll be a big part of our discussion in our big meetings this week. But Wofford and Buffalo, I think Nevada and now Utah State, those teams are in regardless of where they lose in their tournament. Obviously, if they get to the semifinals, get to the finals of their conference tournament, that even bolsters their cause. But right now, those would be bid thieves. If someone upsets Wofford, that team that upsets Wofford's probably in the tournament, and Wofford is in, so that conference will get two bids. I think they're comfortably in with the resume and the way some of the teams at the very bottom are at this point. I think those are your mid-majors, if you would, that are locked in. Now, a Utah State can't beat Nevada and then lose a game or two and then lose the first game of the tournament and have a three-game losing streak. That would put them in danger of maybe being out. But I think those four teams, you might even add Josh Belmont as a team that has it. I think they have a chance. I don't think they're a lock. I think the other mid-majors, because they're sitting at, I believe, if I look at the spreadsheet here, Wofford is sitting at 14 in the net. Buffalo's a 15 in the net. Nevada 23 and Utah State 30. You're in the top 30, unless those numbers drastically change, I think you're going to see some of those mid-majors in. And I'm kind of glad to see that. I would like to see even more, because when you look at the last few teams and they're 17 and 12 and 17 and 13, 16 and 13, why not give some of those teams like Murray State with Ja Morant a chance just to go play a first-round game? And if they don't win it's going to be TV rating gold. What do you think about the number of mid-majors that have made it in the past in the most recent tournaments?
Well, I think there's always an argument for there to be more, just because you have your teams like Loyola, Chicago last year, just go on those Cinderella runs. Just the opportunity for upsets and what really makes the tournament special only increases the more teams that you give that opportunity to. Buffalo just absolutely beat the tar out of Arizona last year in the first round. I'm sure a couple people talked about it. Myself, I didn't really pay a whole lot of attention to Buffalo last season, so that really caught me by surprise. I think it's great for the sport because you get to see these guys that were under-recruited, that didn't really get a chance to play at these big programs because they weren't, top 20 in, 24/7 sports composite rankings for players. And I think if, it's just more storylines, it's more fun. You get to see it. It's just these undersized kids that just play hard, really, go at all these talented five stars, and you just get great games and you see great fundamentals. So I'm all for seeing more mid-majors. I think they deserve an opportunity because, look, some of the big schools just aren't going to go out and schedule them. But I think there needs to be at least more. And, people have talked about expanding the field maybe to get more mid-majors in, and I don't think that's really the answer. I was always okay with 64 teams. But, I think there should be more. I'd like to see at least double-digit, mid-majors, not, somebody that gets an automatic bid from the America East. I want to see more Woffords, more Belmonts, more Buffaloes, Utah States of the world. I think that would be a lot of fun to watch.
You bring up a good point, too. When you go to 68, some of the back end is really watered down. We'll take a look at the bracket here coming up. It happens in football where a spot's saved for a non-Power 5 conference team in the tournament or whatever the protected bowls are. I'm a basketball guy. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure why they can't say there's 2 to 4 mid-major at-large spots. You have 32 automatic qualifiers. You have 32 regular, and then save them for the 22 conferences that are normally one bid. How about a Furman? How about a Lipscomb who've had good seasons? And maybe they wouldn't be selected based on the criteria that the committee uses right now, but they could slot in there at the 12 or the 13, 11, 12, 13 line and really give a mid-major team in that 6, 5, 6, 7 seed range a great game I would love to watch that rather than maybe a couple Power Five conferences. So you're listening to Sports Talk with Tonsoni, Bracket U from Delphi Bracketology. We have a guest, Josh Wilson, with us this evening. Josh has done a lot of media work over the years, and he has asked me, and due to my busy coaching duties, haven't really got with them on how to do the bracketology. So we're going to go through a little bit of bracketology from Josh's perspective. He's going to ask a couple questions. He has access to our bracket, and I'm going to answer questions that way and give a little different perspective. So Josh, as someone who follows college basketball, you're in the media, you have a really good idea of the whole system, but yet you haven't really gotten into deep bracketology. What would be a question or two that you would have for us, since we have been doing it 4 or 5 years?
You know, I think it's always hard for the casual fan to understand like the real metrics that are looked upon and how injuries affect maybe a team status. And I've seen, you know, that question thrown around quite a bit lately, is how injuries, I mean, look at, Michigan State's a prime example. You know, they lost twice to Indiana. They lost to Illinois. They've lost some kind of games that they probably would have won if they had Josh Langford healthy. Nick Ward was there for a couple of games. He was not. But, you know, they go on the road at Michigan and handily beat them without those two. So, how do you guys look at that? How do you think the committee looks at that when, you know, you miss a player and you lose a game on the road that you should win, and you're still missing those players, and you go to a powerhouse like Michigan who – you know, spanked North Carolina in Ann Arbor and went on the road and spanked Villanova, but Michigan State goes in there and wins. Like, how is that graded, or how is that analyzed?
You know, that is probably the most difficult thing for someone not on the committee to really try to guess what the committee is going to do with those injuries. We use a lot of data and look at records and who you beat and where you played, and that stuff is readily available. We can look at team sheets straight from the NCAA. There is not a reporting system for games played or an asterisk by games played without major players. So that has to, we write down as we hear and notice, and we probably don't know maybe but 20, 30% of the injuries, because there might have been someone who sprained an ankle and missed two games that we missed somewhere. But here's what the committee generally has said in the past, that they can't assume that if the players were healthy, that result would change. So they look at the body of work. And then only, I think, if injuries have a major impact over a long portion of the season, will they take that into effect. And then what they have to try to discern, Josh, with injuries, is what team is going to be there in the NCAA tournament. And where would they be if that team was at Michigan State the whole year? So two teams come to mind right now, and a lot of them have had injuries, but two major ones, Michigan State and Kansas. Michigan State played with everyone, then lost Langford. Then now they've lost Ward. And the question the committee's going to have to answer is Ward going to be back, and is he going to be back at full strength for the tournament? So what we're going to do is we're going to look at Michigan State's resume, and we're probably going to keep them where they are mathematically or a seed line lower, just because I think the committee will be cautious with a team like that. So if you look at Michigan State's resume and the numbers are one seed or two seed worthy, they are 23-6 overall, 8-4 on the road, 10-4 in quad one and 4-2 in quad two. They have the most quad wins, along with Kansas, who has the most quad one wins. Those numbers generally would put you in the one or two seed category. Michigan State might drop down to a three because of those injuries. So we have them as the number 7 overall team. We're going to be watching. If they lose quickly in the Big Ten tournament, lose to Michigan, that may send a signal that this team without Ward and without Langford is a little bit lower than what they were with them. Kansas is our number 13 seed, Josh, and they have 10 quad one wins and 5 quad two, number one strength of schedule in the country. That speaks of a two seed at worst, but they've had three teams. They had the team with Azubuike and LeGerald Vick, and then they lost Azubuike and played with Vick, and then Vick takes a leave of absence. They're now on their third team, And what's scary is that you only have to evaluate Kansas for like 10 or 11 games now, because you really can't, you can give them credit for their good wins ahead of time, but that's not the team that's going to be available in March. And so you have to make an adjustment. That's why we have Kansas at the 4 seed line, when we really believe that their numbers are a 2 seed line. And that is just a really good educated guess by our group since we've done it. And that, and last year, Notre Dame was going to, was the first team not in. They almost put in after Bonze Colson missed, what, 12, 13, 14 games, and Notre Dame lost most of those games. And then he came back and they won 2 or 3 in a row. So that's an example there of he played okay with them, played away okay with them at the end, and then in the middle they struggled, and that was almost enough to get Notre Dame in the tournament. So that's a great question, and I wish we could have a handle on that a little bit better, because we're trying to guess and win that bracket matrix, and unless you know what the committee's thinking, it's hard. You can find all the information other than that. So it's just it's a good guess, but I think that's how the committee tries to deal with that, and they have much more information than Delphi Bracketology does.
Right. You make great points, and you know, I'm scanning through the spreadsheet, just kind of looking at all the metrics of the teams, and yeah, I mean, Kansas is really eye popping just with their record and their quad records, and you know, they play in a really strong conference, the Big 12, who's pretty balanced. So I mean, that's a great case study. I'm going to be eager to see where they end up 2 weeks from, you know, well, yesterday now. But especially if they don't win the Big 12 and they don't go win the Big 12 tournament, but they'll have opportunities to stack up more wins. So that's a pretty good case study. And, yeah, I mean, Kansas is a totally different ball club with those two guys on the roster.
You know, and a lot of people have moved Kansas up to the 3 because Houston and Marquette lost this weekend. Right now, we haven't. That doesn't mean, you know, we're meeting tomorrow morning for 45 minutes, and then we're going to have a 2.5-hour session at Buffalo Wild Wings on Tuesday night to really get down and look and compare. But some people have moved Kansas up to the 3 line and moved Marquette and Houston down because of recent results. We're not – we may do that, but right now we're not ready to do that. But Kansas's number, I think the committee is going to be cautious with them because of the 3 different teams.
Yeah, so they're baffling to me, because I've watched them play a couple times, and then they don't look like Kansas, and then, you know, they lose at home, and then they go on the road and, you know, beat the tar out of somebody and look like they're going to win their 15th straight conference championship. So yeah, that's going to be a tough one.
So let's get this out of the way a little bit, because there was a question on Twitter, and I don't know if they expected me to answer it on Twitter or they're tuning into the show live as we record it. But obviously, from my background and the teams that we follow, what does Indiana have to do to get in is a huge question. I'll just ask you, as the casual fan, from where you standpoint, what do you think Indiana has to do in order to make the tournament? And then I'll come back with all my bracketology data information.
Well, so after IU lost at Iowa, I sent a tweet to Jared Morris, who, for those of you that don't know, is who runs Assembly Call. And I told him, I said, if IU wins out, they go 4-0, and they win at least one game in the Big Ten tournament, I think that gets them in, because at that point they are 18-15. They have great quad wins. They don't have any losses in quad 3 or quad 4. I think that's just enough, just because I saw the team pre-January 3rd and just the teams they beat and how they won. And I think that, you know, they have a young team, and I don't know how the committee factors that in, if they do at all, but obviously they hit kind of like a slide, and you know, they've turned it around. And I think if you beat Michigan State twice, if you beat Wisconsin, you've beat Marquette, Louisville, Butler's still a good win. I don't know if it's a great win anymore, but it's still, you know, you still beat a solid team. How does a team like that, that's 18-15, not get in? I would like to see Indiana's resume this year if they do that, compared to Alabama, I think it was last year. Was it Vanderbilt the year before, maybe? Yeah. Both those teams had 15 losses. So I would be eager to see that. And I know we have the net and the RPI, or versus the RPI now. But I think they went out. They win one game in the Big Ten. I think they get in. 18-15, I think they get in.
I think 18-15 is the best that they can do to get in. I'm thinking 19 wins to be safe. And some of the things that that I looked at after yesterday's win. Indiana is 7-14 in quad one and quad two. So the six really stands out as great, and those wins are great. And I do think Indiana has a type of squad that can beat people. But when you've only have a 33% winning percentage against the top teams in that you played on your schedule, that doesn't, you know, Creighton is 9-13. They're on the bubble. Teams that are in, Arizona State is 10-5 against quad one and two. Seton Hall is 10-10. Alabama is 9-11. Minnesota is 9-11, and Indiana is 7-14. That worries me as an Indiana fan, that when the committee starts diving down, do we put Indiana in over Arizona State? Do we put them in over Seton Hall? The quad one numbers look great. The other thing that concerns me about the Hoosiers is 2-9 on the road. Now, they'll be 3-9 if they beat Illinois. That stands out against those teams that are last four in. You know, Temple 7-5, Arizona's 5-5 on the road. Maybe a Minnesota and TCU are that low of wins on the road. So if Indiana gets in, it's going to be because of the quad one wins, and they have some good ones. When you beat Marquette and Louisville and Michigan State twice, I think that's going to really play well. I just think that I'm worried about bid thieves too. If you had to replace anyone in our last four in right now, I could easily see an Indiana at 18-15 or 19-15 get in. But if Wofford gets beat, if those things happen, now you got to go up even further and knock teams out. That's what worries me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you just a question. I have a question here about Michigan State. What are your thoughts on Michigan State? We mentioned them about the injuries. Where do you think they are as far as competing to get to the Sweet 16 and to the Final Four with the squad that they have?
Well, you know, I think they're dangerous because normally teams that have good point guard play really, you know, dominate in March for the most part. And, you know, we've seen teams go on historic runs, you know, Kemba Walker at Connecticut, even Shabazz Napier at Connecticut, teams that have real dominant guards. And then in Michigan State's got a really good one in Cassius Winston. The big key will be is, you know, how does Nick Ward play when he gets back? Because Tillman and Goins really have filled in well for him. But, you know, he's a big key because he's really a true back-to-the-basket, can get you a bucket from 6 feet in type of guy. And, you know, those are tough to come by as well. So I think they're dangerous. But I think, you know, if they're not hitting shots, they can be in a little bit of troublesome area too. But, they're going to be probably a four seed or higher depending on how the rest of the season shakes out. I think they have one more game against Michigan or Nebraska. Michigan, I think, is what they have left. But, you know, they're going to have opportunities to win. They're going to have an opportunity to win the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, if they get hot, not that I'm a big fan of Tom Izzo, but we know what he does in March and how good he is. So, I mean, they're as capable as anybody.
Now, I am a fan of Tom Izzo, not so much for some of the disciplinarian crap that went through the last few years. I think he could have handled that a little better. But from an X and O standpoint, I do think he does a good job. I was like four or five rows behind him Saturday and enjoyed watching him in action. Enjoyed seeing him get beat. I'm not going to lie about that. But the question was on Twitter, is Michigan State still set for a two seed? Right now, yes. And they have a home game against Michigan. If they win that, I think they're definitely going to be locked into a two seed regardless of what happens in the Big Ten tournament. I think the lowest they're going to fall to is a three seed, so I think they're looking good. Another question that was asked on Twitter, how is St. John's looking and what do they need to do to lock up a bid? St. John's, if we look at the – St. John's is a difficult team because they are right now – our last number nine seed at 20-10 overall, 4-6 on the road, 6-4 in quad one and 4-4 in quad three. They have 4-4 in quad two. They are 2-2 in quad three. Those two losses in quad three don't help them much. The dangerous thing is they're a 61 in the net, which means their offensive metrics and defensive metrics aren't as high as some of the other teams. And that brings up an interesting question for me that I have for myself is how much influence is the net and those efficiency rankings going to have? If you look at Josh, I think if I were honest, a 6-4, 4-4 record that they have could possibly be a 7. they can probably have moved up 10 overall seed spots just with their quad one and quad two. The Nets hurting them, and their two losses in quad three are hurting them. Have you had a chance to take a look at St. John's this year?
I've seen them. I think I watched them play at Marquette, and I think I caught a little bit of the game when they played Butler. And then they beat Duke earlier in the year, right?
Or no, I think they lost to Duke.
Okay, I can't remember, but
I'm pretty. You know, I'll call them up here.
I think they beat Duke last year because that game was in Madison Square Garden. So, you know, I'm not sure about St. John's because they were. I mean, they have some really good top level talent with Shamori Ponds. Marvin Clark's a pretty good ball player for them. Former Michigan State commit, former IU recruit as well that Tom Crean went after, but. You know, I'm not sure because they're always kind of up and down. You know, they're not really consistent. I'd have to look at their schedule to see what kind of wins they have. Because, you know, a big thing for me is when you get down to the nitty gritty. You know, when you guys have teams that have similar resumes, do the sexier wins, do the bigger wins come into play? Would be my question.
Yes, and that's a great question and one that we're glad to ask. The question is yes. An interesting thing on the NCAA team sheets that are available, anyone listening, Google NCAA archive or RPI archive. I believe that's the – I'll try to see the link here. And they produce all of the team sheets that the committee see on their computer. NCAA RPI archive, okay? So don't get fooled by the name. The RPI is dead, and the net is what's being used. But on these team sheets, Josh, they take all the quad one wins, and now they have a category called 1A. And they have those are your top wins at home, top wins on the road, top wins neutral. And I don't know the numbers. I want to say it's like any win at home against 1 through 15. Is a tier 1A win. So they break it down in tier 1 and tier 2, even into subcategories for the committee to watch. So I think that answers your question. Those top wins in tier 1 and tier 2 are a little more sexy than the teams at the bottom. What we have done at Delphi Bracketology in the past is we've just looked at the number, and we'll put a spreadsheet out. St. John's, what were their top, you know, 6 wins? Number-wise in the old RPI. This year we'll do it number-wise in the net. And so we just have that across the whiteboard in the classroom, and we'd look, this team has beaten a lot better teams than someone else. And I think what you asked is absolutely right. That helps in a probably 2 or 3, 4 team comparison, which is called scrubbing the bracket. So, yes, if you beat better teams – I think you could have 2 or 3 less quad one wins, but if your wins are better, I think that might make up for a little bit of a lack of number. And that's what I use. Wins look good. Not only are they 6, but I think 2 of them are in the top tier, or 3 of them are in the top tier. I want to go back and say, Josh, that Mississippi State, if you look at Mississippi State, we have them as the last 5 seed right now, and they have 8 quad one wins. And someone might say, well, Wisconsin has 8 quad one wins, and you have them a whole seed higher. Yeah, mm-hmm. The reason that we do that is because the wins for Wisconsin are sexier in your terms than Mississippi State. And we believe, we really looked at this, Florida State, Kansas State, Iowa State have better wins than Mississippi State. So they're going to be higher than a team that has more quad one wins. And so, you know, what St. John's has going for them is beating Villanova and beating Marquette twice. But outside of that, the inconsistencies that you mentioned are, you know, that's what I think is keeping them down. I see some people have St. John's in the first 4 out. I think I don't like them at the 9 necessarily, but because of their net at 61. But we'll have to see. That's an interesting thing. So. In looking at our spreadsheet, those are questions from our listeners. Is there any other team that you've scanned over there that you would question or look at or wonder how the heck we have placed them where they would be placed?
Okay, so let's do some theoreticals here. So let's say IU beats let's just use IU. A, that we're obviously fans of IU, but B, I think they have a very interesting they're in a very interesting predicament right now. So let's say they beat Illinois and they beat Rutgers, and they do win the one game in the Big Ten. They're 18-15. Let's say Arizona State slides a little bit, and I'm trying to figure out how many games they're going to have left. Maybe they go. Let's say they go 21-12. So Arizona State, I mean, they have more quad two wins, quad one not as good, but they have two losses in each quad three and quad four. Schedule strength's not there, probably not the pretty wins like IU, the big time wins. How would if they were on an even keel, or let's say maybe Arizona State's a notch or two ahead, obviously with record, who wins that battle?
You know, that. Josh, you just brought up probably the most difficult thing for our group in the last 4 years, because the record would look better for Arizona State at 21-12 than Indiana at 18-15. But Indiana doesn't have two quad four losses, and Indiana doesn't have two quad three losses. So those are four bad losses for Arizona State. And yes, they would be three games ahead of Indiana in overall record, but Indiana played a tougher schedule and didn't lose to anybody in quad three and four, and only played eight games against those teams. So I think if Arizona State is 21-12, that means they've lost a couple games down the stretch here and an early exit in the Pac-12. I think they're out, and that would mean Indiana would be in. I think Seton Hall's facing a real tough challenge. I think they got Villanova and Marquette left in the regular season. If they lose both of those, they're sitting at 16-14, and then they got to go to a Big East tournament, which is much like the Big Ten, where the seedings really don't matter. They're all kind of jumbled together, and if they lose their first one at 16-15, Seton Hall's out.
Right.
So,
and that leads me to the team. So Washington has obviously been a topic of conversation. I think the entire Pac-12 has been a topic of conversation this year, not for a good reason. I mean, they're 23-6. Strength of schedule's not there, but, I mean, they do have a quad four loss. I remember a lot of people talk. Was that the Cal game that they lost? Okay. So they're your first nine seed.
Yeah.
Is that a team if they slide a little bit? I mean, obviously the Pac-12 might be a one bid league.
You know, that is something to watch, because some people are talking about that if Washington gets upset early in the tournament that they won't make it at 23-6. I think they're two quad one wins if they stay, because right now Oregon's like in the 70s and Colorado's in 74, so they could drop down. In fact, they did drop out of the quad one territory. I think Washington's in as an at-large, simply where they're at right now. If you look at their numbers, despite the loss to Cal, and if Washington wins the Pac-12, I do think it'll be a one win or a one bid team, because they're the favorite. Mm-hmm. We caught a lot of grief a little bit on Twitter about Washington, and then Washington went out and lost Cal. So karma was up a little bit with that Twitter exchange last week. Washington at one point was a seven, and then the loss to Cal dropped them down to an eight. And then when we reevaluate three times a week from scratch, and then just comparing Washington's numbers to Ole Miss, Ohio State, Iowa, and Baylor, we felt that Washington was not as good as those teams, so that pushed them down to the top nine. That's going to be – the Pac-12 is going to be an interesting conference tournament to watch, and I think it ends on Saturday before the selection committee, and that gives the committee a little difficulty too, is a lot of the bracketing, a lot of the teams are already selected by the time you know, that Saturday night game is played. So they probably have some contingency situation going. You know, if Washington's in the championship game, I'd imagine the second Pac-12 team is going to be in the play-in game maybe, or an 11 seed. Hmm. So that's kind of how we look at teams like Nevada, Buffalo, Washington. Though Auburn right now, with your low quad one wins, are very hard to see to seed, because they do have some good quad two wins, and they generally have some blips on their record, and that's difficult for us to try to predict.
Yeah, I could imagine it. And Nevada is, you know, teams like that, I mean, they've got a lot of graduate transfers, or a lot of guys that transfer from big-time programs. And you know, they just haven't played anybody, whether that's at their own fault or maybe not being able to get the schedules. And a lot of schedules are done in advance. So, but yeah, they, I mean, they've only played two quad one games. And, you know, kind of reverting back to earlier, you know, I always ask myself as well, what does that team do in the Big Ten? What does it do in the SEC? Or, I mean, the ACC for that matter. I mean, are we even having a conversation about them right now if they play in one of those conferences? So sometimes that's fair, sometimes it's not. But I'm really surprised to see that they're a seventh, because they were ranked in the top 10 over the weekend. But obviously their resume is not, I mean,
strong. We have had some good success with looking at numbers. And if you look at Nevada's numbers, they're not very strong. But this year with the net, including performance metrics, I think you're going to see some teams like Nevada and Auburn who are higher in the net, 23 and 20 respectfully for those two teams, and low quad one wins but higher quad two wins. I think you're going to see those teams very close to their overall net ranking. So, you know, we have Nevada at 27, their net's 23. We have Auburn at 28, their net ranking is 20. Simply because I believe it's a new tool for the committee and they want to kind of put their hat on the fact that this is new and better than the old RPI. And I think when it comes to teams like Nevada and Auburn who had some preseason recognition but then just haven't kind of gotten it done, and their resumes aren't awful, there's no glaring huge weaknesses, I think you'll see them very close, a seed line below maybe where the net has them. I think that's the case for Cincinnati. Buffalo will be close to their seed line, their 15 net. I think we have them as a 23. And that's going to be real interesting on Selection Sunday to see where those teams fall, especially like, you know, you have Nevada with one quad one win and they're a seven seed, and you have St. John's with six quad one wins and they're a nine seed, and you have Indiana with six quad one wins and they're the fifth team out. So, you know, that's what people sometimes don't understand, that don't dive into some of this. And I don't mean that in any condescending way, because we were that way 4 or 5 years ago till we started studying it. It's just not one criteria. It's not the AP voting. It's not the net or the old RPI. It's not the quad one wins. It's not the bad losses. It is a bunch of that put together and then some dudes and some ladies trying to figure it out.
Right.
And, you know, like Purdue people will get upset, I guarantee you, because they're going to win the Big Ten and be ranked lower than Michigan and Michigan State. And then you can just hear it on Selection Sunday. How can the Big Ten champions be below Michigan and Michigan State? Well, that has nothing to do with conference rankings, conference championships, and there's no rule that says the best team in the conference has to have the highest seed. And our team, Indiana, in 2016 won the Big Ten championship and was a fifth seed, and Michigan State was a two seed, I think. Yep. And so fans who that, you know, that's hard to understand unless you are really into this stuff, how that can happen. But every game matters, is important for everyone to know, whether it happened in November or it happened in March, whether it's a non-conference or a conference game, every game counts the same. And so, you know, the clamor for 500 in conference and all of those things, that may be something to look at, but it is not used right now. So, I wish people, and this is good to get out of, I wish people would get upset with the NCAA criteria, not the committee members, because the committee members get a charge from the NCAA that you will look at these things and here are the rules. And the thing that I found, Josh, is that the committee really does follow their charge. Mm-hmm. And there's so much anger about the committee and, oh, they don't know basketball and we need more basketball guys on the committee. And all of that may be correct, but don't take it out on the committee. Take it out on the people at the NCAA who give the set of criteria, the charge, the rules to those people, men and women in the room. They watch basketball. They meet throughout the year. They do a lot more than we do and Lenardi and everyone else does. And I have learned that given the criteria, there might be one, two, or three decisions that are a little bit awkward. From my vantage point, when I was just a fan, it was like 15 or 30 awkward seedings. I've just come to appreciate what they do. Now, I have some beefs with the criteria. I think mid-majors need to have a schedule factor built in or have some spots. I would like to see a minimum loss requirement. If you lose, 13 is the maximum or 12 is the maximum. You just can't lose that many games. And go find some teams to fill out the bracket. As much as I want Indiana in, it just pains me to put an 18-15 team in the NCAA tournament.
Well, you bring that up, so I was scrolling through. So Texas,
yeah,
they're your first 10 seed, which I mean, obviously isn't a great seed, but they're 16-13. And honestly, I mean, from my perspective, they're probably what, one loss away from, you know, heading out the door.
Yeah, exactly. And they have five quad one wins and four quad two wins, and you compare that. That's better than teams that are on our seven seed line, Josh.
Yeah, yeah.
But losses have to matter too. You know, everyone talks about wins. Oh, there's some great wins and there's some quad wins. Well, you know what? That losses matter too. You know, last year we made the mistake of putting Oklahoma State in because they had five quad one wins, and they were 19-14 and had a low RPI, and so that, you know, it's just you do have to win.
Mm-hmm.
But you also, you know, and I tell the Indiana fans, and you can vouch for me, I'm the biggest Indiana fan. Look at my man cave behind here. There's nothing more than I want to see Indiana in the tournament. But if you want to get in a tournament, don't lose 12 out of 13.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, there's just some honesty there. You don't lose 12 out of 13 and expect to be a tournament because you just win two games.
Right.
I've gotten a lot of Indiana people that, oh, come on, you're not comparing the whole field. You're eliminating Indiana because they're only one game over 500. Yeah, I am. That's a struggle. Texas has a really nice resume. It's hard for me not to move them up.
Mm-hmm.
Other than, you know, they lose tonight. I think are they playing Texas Tech tonight or Texas they Tech lose? You. They lose tonight. And we're probably going to drop them out tomorrow because that's nobody. I think it's only one time in 20, 25 years where a team has been in the tournament two games above 500.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that may happen this year because I think it's a weak field from Texas on down. You know, they may say if Texas ends up, you know, two games above 500 but has six wins, they get in. Again, I go down to this, Josh. I'd rather see Lipscomb. I'd rather see St. Mary's. I'd rather see Furman at 21-6. I'd rather see North Carolina Greensboro in at 24-5, Murray State 23-4, than Texas at 16-14.
Right.
Murray State has no chance of getting in unless they win the Ohio Valley Conference tournament in Evansville. None. And they got one of the best players. It would be ratings gold. They're 23-4. I think, you know, I get it. You got to win games there too.
Mm-hmm.
But, man. I tell you, it's crazy.
Yeah, and you know, as a casual fan, I've been learning more about this, you know, ever since we, you know, became friends and have talked about all this stuff. And, I mean, I would always, a casual fan, just sit down and look at record, really. Who have you beaten? And I've always, you know, wondered to do our good loss. So if you have eight good losses, are eight good losses better than three bad losses? So – and because, I mean, if you lose, you know, to Duke, Michigan State, Syracuse, Virginia, and then you have a team that gets beat by Cal and some other, you know, bottom feeder in the 200s or whatever, you know, I guess, is it okay? Is it better to lose to good teams? Because, I mean, there's teams out there that play just a daunting schedule. Kansas, for example. Is it better to lose to good teams more or bad teams less?
Both, but – Here's an example. We look back at the 3 years to try to find some trends. Creighton last year was an eight seed at number 30. We had them 37 as one of our big misses. They were 2-9 against quad one, 5-2 against quad two, and had no bad losses. So they were thought pretty highly of the committee because they didn't lose to people other than the toughest people in their conference. And something the IUs and the Minnesotas and Ohio State has going for them. If you look back, the Big East was really good last year and had two number one seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So you had Villanova and Xavier sitting there at the number one. And I think the committee said, okay, Creighton went 2-9 in a really good conference, and a lot of their nine losses came to those teams. I'm trying to think who else from the Big East made it. Providence made it. Butler made it. And there's another thing, and you just helped me figure this out. Butler was eight spots higher than we had him.
Mm.
And so they might look at strength of a conference. So Seton Hall was 29 last year. Creighton was 30. Butler was 33. Providence was 35. And they all had sub 500 records in quad one. Seton Hall 4-8. Creighton 2-9. Butler 4-10. Providence 5-8. So I do think you've come up losing the losses in quad one don't matter unless it's, you know, when you have a lot, it throws you under 500. And I think if you're under 500 in quad one, you're going to be 7, 8, 9 seed, something like that. But I think it's better to have those than to lose in quad three and quad four. And I mean, but you say that, and West Virginia had two quad three losses and were a 5 seed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so two number ones had quad three losses, Villanova and Kansas last year. So it depends, but you got to win games. You got to avoid a large number of losses. But again, I think going back to our Indiana argument, 9 losses, Creighton sitting at 3-10 in quad one, you know, they have a chance to sneak in too if they can stay above that 3-game, you know, level over 500. So. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff from the bracket perspective. We probably met our time. It's been 45 minutes. Josh, I appreciate you coming on. We didn't really plan a whole lot. We just kind of were winging it. We'll put this out on iTunes and everything else in the morning. And I appreciate your friendship and joining Bracket U.
Yeah, always great to be on. And, you know, anything I can learn from you will only help down the road and many selection Sundays.
Well, we've made you an honorary member of Delphi Bracketology because we shared our secret, you know, the folder secret of stuff. So welcome to the group, and you're welcome to converse with us anytime. Keep the faith. 2 more wins for Indiana. We'll be looking good.
Yeah, I hope so. I'm Thursday's going to be tough, but I hope they can pull it out.
So for Josh Wilson, I'm Brian Tonsoni. This is Sports Talk with Tonsoni, a Bracket U show. Brought to you by Delphi Bracketology. Look us up on DelphiBracketology.com online. We have articles. We have our seed list. Follow us on Twitter. The handle is at Delphi Brackets. We love to correspond with our fans and let us know. Look for more podcasts here down the stretch. Thanks for listening.